Well, a full house on a snowy day, huh? That's great. It's better here than trying to cross the street anywhere in town. Unless you have on high boots and a ski pole. So welcome to our Zazen Kai. It's our second one of this Zango that Musho is serving as our Shuso, as our practice leader. We're doing this brilliant thing today, you know, sitting Zazen, doing nothing, to think nothing, to do nothing, to not gain anything. That's pretty remarkable in this community we live in, this world that we live in, to dedicate a day to do nothing. So you can hear from my introductory words that our study text must be the Diamond Sutra, the jewel of the Prajnaparamita texts. And I think that our study really has been about really looking deeply into our grasping. The grasping that, in particular, causes our own suffering and that of others. We grasp at an idea of who we are, of how we want to present ourselves to the world. And we're very unhappy that the reality doesn't match that. It does not match the dream. It couldn't match the dream, the fantasy. And we become very unhappy with ourselves, with just how we are. We're not matching some idea. And, of course, we find others lacking, too. Not measuring up to our idea of how they should be. Rather than meeting them where they are. So by now you should be somewhat familiar with the language of the Diamond Sutra and its consistent demand for us to drop these fixed ideas, our fixed conception of all the dharmas, of all the teachings, our fixed conceptions of who we are, of what we're doing here today. You know, you could fail at what you're doing here today if you have an idea about what you should be doing here today. Then you could get really depressed. So the Diamond Sutra is really a teaching about liberation. What happens when we drop it all? I mean, I would say most of the people here in this room have dropped it all from time to time and felt that release, all of the expectation drops away and you're just here. You're just who you are in this moment, authentically. So what's ironic is that when people come to this practice to wake up, sometimes we find ourselves in some very dark, mysterious place, some arduous search for something called awakening, or enlightenment, We hear about enlightenment. We hear about it. Yummy, I want some. I want to wake up. I want to get that. That over there, I'm sure I know what it's like. I read about it. I mean, I can talk from personal experience about this syndrome. You want to get it. And it is, of course, that desperate moving towards it that when we pushes us away from it. And I become very sad when I meet people who have become discouraged and who've left the practice because they haven't gotten something that isn't real, that they've thought of. And they feel failures. And I, because of my position as a teacher, I unfortunately run into this. And it is very, very sad. Because these people are quitting the practice that very much could, in fact, change their lives. When we meet ourselves authentically, it changes our life. So that, I think that that is the theme of the section of the sutra I want to talk about today, sections 7 and 8. Here is Harrison's translation of section 7, the Diamond Sutra. Furthermore, the Lord said this to the Venerable Subhuti. What do you think, Subhuti? Is there anything whatsoever that the Tathagata has fully awakened to? Or any dharma whatsoever that the Tathagata has taught as supreme and perfect awakening? So, he's asking faithful Subhuti. Subhuti says, Lord, as I understand the meaning of what the Lord has preached, there is no dharma whatsoever that the Tathagata has fully awakened to, nor any dharma whatsoever that the Tathagata has taught as supreme and perfect awakening. Why is that? The dharma which the Tathagata has taught is ungraspable, is ineffable. It is neither a dharma nor a non-dharma. Why is that? Because the noble persons are distinguished by the power they derive from the unconditioned. So here, the Buddha is asking Subhuti exactly what the question I was posing. Is there a something, a dharma, a special teaching that the Buddha has awakened to, has been enlightened to? They're a thing. And even more, is there a dharma that the Buddha has taught as supreme awakening? Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Subhuti, at this point, has got the dialectic of the sutra, right? I mean, we've been through this for the last, the previous sections. So he says, oh, no, there's no thing that is the awakened mind. There is no thing that can be taught as supreme enlightenment. Why? Because it's ungraspable. It's ineffable. It is neither a dharma nor a non-dharma. So we can all feel quite wise hearing that. And then later today we'll chant, may we all realize the truth of enlightenment. That's the dedication in our service that we do. Sounds a little different from the Diamond Sutra, doesn't it? May we all realize the truth of enlightenment. But is it so different? Is negation so different from affirmation? What is it that supersedes both negation and affirmation? As a Zen person, I would argue that that is the basic teachings of most of the koans that we study and most of the stories that you hear about Zen, the Zen path. That our very idea of emptiness, enlightenment, goodness, charity, are all ideas. And in order to make them real, we have to dissolve our ideas and wake up and live these truths personally in our own heart. In the 9th century China, there's a story that illustrates this. Two Zen monks were sitting together, and Xicheng asked his teacher, Sisang, how do you grasp emptiness? Can you grasp emptiness? Which is what we're talking about. Can you grasp it? Sisang said, yeah, I can. Xicheng said, well, how? Sisang grabbed empty space like this. Xicheng said, you don't understand how to grasp emptiness. Sisang said, well, how do you grasp it? Xicheng grabbed a hold of Sisang's nose and just pulled it really hard. Sisang screams, ouch! Ouch! Xicheng says, you can only grasp emptiness in this way. What's the difference between grasping out at space like this? I want to be awakened. I want enlightenment. Satori, give me Satori. The difference between that and, this is my very nose. This is my very life. This is my very body. This is what is actually real. Dogen commented on this koan. He said, that was emptiness grasping emptiness. So whether we do it in a dramatic storytelling way, like the Zen tradition does, or in the Diamond Sutra way, which is telling and more explanatory, if we sit long enough, I think we realize what it is we're about here. There is no something called enlightenment. And that there is a reason that we say, may we realize the truth of enlightenment. So, beautiful bowl, Miyoko. To clarify it further, now that I'm stirring the mud for you, let's look at the following section, number 8, where the Buddha uses the concept of merit to further show the way. The human mind complicates and corrupts a generous impulse. The way the human mind complicates and corrupts a generous impulse. So this section I like a lot. What do you think, Subhuti, if someone were to fill this trigalactic, megagalactic world system with the 7 treasures and give it as a gift? Then what do you think, Subhuti, would that gentleman or lady generate a lot of merit on that basis? Subhuti said, a lot, Lord, a lot, blessed one. That gentleman or lady would generate a lot of merit on that basis. Why is that? It is indeed, Lord, quantity-less. For that reason, the Tathagata preaches that a quantity of merit is quantity-less. Dum. Dum, dum. The Lord said, if, however, some gentleman or lady were to fill this trigalactic, megagalactic world system with the 7 treasures and give it as a gift, Subhuti, And if someone else were to do no more than learn just one four-line verse from this round of teachings and teach and illuminate others, then the latter would on that basis generate a lot more merit, an immeasurable, incalculable amount. Why is that? Because it is from this subhuti that the supreme and perfect awakening of the Tathagatas is born. It is from this that the Buddhas and Lords are born. What is the reason for that? The so-called dharmas of a Buddha subhuti are indeed devoid of any dharmas of a Buddha. So this section, you know, starts out with this vast cosmic vision. We are in a trigalactic, megagalactic world system. For this line alone, I approve of this translation. How big is that? Huh? What is the function of sighting all these galaxies and huge world systems? I think it's to make us realize that we are part of something else besides our own ego, that we are interconnected with the vastness. And it also provides us with a perspective on our lives. So what the Buddha is asking Subhuti is interesting. If you were to give a big pile, a huge pile of jewels, valuable jewels, that would fill that whole space of not space that we're looking at, would you then generate a lot of merit? And somebody says, well, no, there'd be no quantity of merit. Because there's no quantity of merit, therefore, a lot of merit would be generated. So once we realize that there's no such thing as merit, then we can talk about merit, is what he's saying. But merit is a very tricky concept. Both then and today. Cleary translates the word as blessing, which for whatever reason I prefer. Would a lot of blessings be accumulated? You know, throughout the history of most religious systems, accumulating merit or blessings or indulgences has been a very economic way to support a community. So, you know, when you pay your dues, you get merit. Well, I was teasing you, but nobody laughs. Uh-oh. We better go back to step one. There is no merit. So, what is this? All traditions have this, you know, this idea that you accumulate some sort of heap of goodness. And, you know, it certainly can be argued and has been argued by many that many belief systems have erected these systems of merit in order to support themselves. That's what I spoke about last week, what made Bodhidharma's remark to Emperor Wu so powerful. I have built all these temples. I've given all my treasury to build up Buddhism in China. What merit have I received? No merit whatsoever. You know that's delivered with bad breath. You know? You can just see it. I mean, there's going to be nothing sweet in this interchange. No merit whatsoever. And yet, consider the deep satisfaction that comes from giving. Giving a kind word or a smile. Or giving food, or clothing, or money, giving jewels. Enough jewels to fill the tri-galactic, mega-galactic universe. So what is that feeling when we give? Should we be ashamed of it? When we give freely, maybe it feels like a blessing. Maybe it feels like a heap of merit. Without any expectation of getting something back. That would be the key, wouldn't it? Without any expectation of getting something back. Just the flow of giving. There's the merit. There's the blessing. It's here and it's gone in an instant. But then in the same section, you know, the Buddha says, well, to give even four little lines of the wisdom of this sutra that might illuminate someone else's mind, then that certainly would be worth more merit than all the jewels. So in this section, he doesn't go on to gloss on merit as he's done in the previous sections on a person, an idea, a dharma, enlightenment. He leaves that to our own sense because he's making a larger point. That to offer these teachings is in fact worthwhile for the reasons that I was talking about before. These teachings in fact are liberative. It is, to use a phrase from the previous section, to plant the roots of goodness. And the way that we teach these four lines is not with the words, it's by showing with our lives, with our bodies, with how we are, that we're not grasping at anything, that we're not fixed on anything. Even, I would argue, our idea of justice, goodness, dharma, truth, then we're free to embody justice. We're free to embody goodness, dharma, or truth. Because we realize that the words that we use are useful and handy tags in order to manipulate our ideas. But they're not real. That's what the Diamond Sutra is. All the Diamond Sutra is saying, actually, from the beginning to the end. Yesterday, a dear friend of mine told me that he'd been thrown off his depression when he realized that he'd been struggling with an idea and a view about himself, a view that he wasn't measuring up. And out of that idea, his whole world just shrank and shrank and became frozen. He became lost and sad. And it took a combination of psychotherapy, Zazen, and believe it or not, the Diamond Sutra to bring him back to the blessing, the goodness of his ordinary face, of his life right now, just as it is, with all the challenges he faces. Ah, it's like the chains fall away. What was I thinking? And the chains fall away. I wished I'd had a chance to yank on his nose. The Diamond Sutra asks us to recognize this and to offer it to others. Not by lecturing as I've been today. That's not the way. But just by simply and humbly living this truth. This truth of no truth, and therefore we're going to call it a truth. And in that way we plant the roots of goodness around all of those that we encounter. So let me end with a gatha to encourage us. So complicated. Is there a truth or a dharma or a person on the number one train? On the Zafu next to you? Or is it the space in between that connects, that offers the roots of goodness?